What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I'm so glad that she wore red because one of my questions was going to be about how much red does Daniela Bruce own. So let me just start with that. Why not? Before I even introduce you, how much red do you own? You cover the Red Wings, so it would make sense if you own a good amount, right?
A lot of red. All different shades of red. Jackets, dresses, yeah. Skirts, all the things. I've got so many blazers all in different colors. But I love that our colors are red, and it's one of my favorite colors to wear. So it works for me.
It's one of the classiest organizations for me, Original Six, and I just love the simplicity of it. The red and the white. I love it. You can't go wrong. Daniela Bruce joining us here as we continue here on Pucks and Seven. We're talk Red Wings. We're going to go 77 seconds in with Daniela a bit later on. She, of course, covers the Red Wings and also the Tigers. So I want to begin with, unfortunately, baseball. So you're based in Detroit. I'm based in Toronto. So enough said about that whole thing. Let me just ask you, the Game 7 between Toronto and the Dodgers, that whole World Series, you've covered baseball. I've seen baseball. I can't remember anything like that before.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. And honestly, you know, I think Detroit, I was kind of rooting for the Blue Jays. Loved that story. Right. You know, I wanted them to pull it off. And that game was just incredible. The entire series was incredible. Yeah. But that game, it felt like every single pitch and just you're on your toes for everything. You're on the edge of your seat every single second of that game, every pitch of that game. And you just knew something spectacular was going to happen with the way that not only that series went, but the entire postseason was pretty good. Like, we had a really good baseball postseason this year. It was an incredible game, an incredible series. And I think it was for Toronto, unfortunate, of course, but they have everything to hang their hat on. What a great series. What a great season. It was so fun to watch.
And I remember having a conversation with somebody before it was Toronto against Seattle. I said, well, it could be Toronto against Detroit. And I was thinking that would have been kind of a neat thing too, because the proximity geographically would have been a lot closer, right? So,
yeah, you know what's funny too is we were actually in Toronto with the Red Wings when the ALCS series started.
Right, right.
So we were all hoping that the Tigers would get there. We'll be able to be there and watch a game or two.
Yeah.
But it ended up being Seattle. It was an unfortunate ending for the Tigers too, but they had a good season as well.
A long season, 108 to 62 a game. So there's a lot happening. Okay, let's get into the Red Wings. Speaking of the season, so that terrible start against Montreal, we'll dive into what Todd McClellan did after that in just a second. But looking at what's going on with the team lately, they went on a great run after that loss to Montreal. In the last three, they lost to Vegas. Tough team, tough loss, 1-0, very close. And then you lose 4-1, and then you lose 5-1 to Connor Bedard, who's just on fire right now with Chicago. What have you noticed differently in the last few games, specifically the last two, I think, against the Rangers and Chicago, that are some of the things that the Red Wings are struggling with?
Well, they're just not scoring, right? Their offense has taken a huge, huge dive. And I mean, I think they've scored they scored a goal in each of those losses that you're talking about, three straight losses. Yeah. They actually did not score against Vegas. They lost 1-0.
Right.
So they're just not scoring right now. And you can point to the power play, which was starting off the season really good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now they went 0-5 against the Chicago Blackhawks. And then they went 0-4 against the Rangers. And they went 0-2 against the Golden Knights. So they're like 0-11 right now in their last 11 power plays, which isn't going to win you games. And then Chicago goes 3-for-3 yesterday. So you're losing that special teams battle. And that's a huge part of the game. Not only you're not going to score on every power play, right?
Right.
We know that. And power plays are going to go hot and cold, but you want your power plays to be able to build you some momentum. The Red Wings had a 4-minute power play against the Blackhawks, and they just could get nothing going. So there's nothing there right now that's really creating for them. They're having a hard time finishing their chances.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that they'll come out of that. They'll figure it out. They'll start putting the puck in the net, and things will seem a little different. But right now, it's just not happening. They put up 45 shots on Arvid Soderblom yesterday against the Blackhawks, or on Sunday against the Blackhawks, and just couldn't get one to go. He made some great saves. And again, the power play just was not clicking, couldn't get anything going. They held the puck in the offensive zone for the majority of that game. They had more offensive zone time than the Blackhawks. So there are some good things that are there. They're just not finishing right now. And I think, again, they'll come out on the other side of that.
Connor Bedard is on a different level right now. And what's neat about what's going on in the league at the moment, I think we're all pretty much a month in, I guess, a month and change in. You look at some of the older guys doing what they're still doing. Crosby is still playing well. Corey Perry still turning back the clock at 40. Evgeny Malkin playing well. But then you have Leo Carlson, Macklin Celebrini, Connor Bedard, all these really young guys. Matthew Schaefer, 18 years of age. NHL's in such a great spot right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the Red Wings in general, too, like their youth movement, and no, they're not the names that you just mentioned. Yeah. I think Connor Bedard, for one, is having like the season that he needed to have, at least the start to the season, right? All the pressures of being a number one overall pick and being less than what everybody expected for the first couple of seasons, and now he looks like the guy, right? Yeah. He looks like that guy everybody expected. So great for him. He's so fun to watch. And then the Red Wings specifically, their whole team almost, well, half their team is youth right now. And Steve Yzerman has been drafting really well. Mo Sider and Lucas Raymond are in their fifth year, but they're 23, 24 years
That's
old.
That's ridiculous.
Right? They're still very young. They're wearing A's. Yeah. And like, I think people forget that. Even me that covers the team, you forget how young these players actually are. And then Simon Edvinson on the blue line, Albert Johansson. You've got Axel Sandin Pellikka, who's a rookie this year. Emmett Finney, the seventh round pick, that's a rookie this year. Nate Danielson made his NHL debut against the Blackhawks. So they're really pushing for that youth movement as well. But I think it's exciting for the league, right? You want to know that when the guys like the Alexander Ovechkins, the Sidney Crosbys, the Corey Perrys, all those guys are done. Like, this is the next generation. They're here and we're seeing it. And it's going to be exciting hockey for a long time.
The expectations you had going in, I believe I have this correct, that Detroit, they missed out on the postseason by 5 points. So it's not like they missed out by quite a lot. So it was close, and they're trending. I've been pushing and pulling for Detroit for a long time. I like the direction the team is going in. After last season, after the offseason, going into game one, I know game one was a complete dud. We'll talk about that in a second. What were your expectations of what, say, after game 82, where Detroit would be?
Well, go back even, I'll preface this by saying go back 2 years.
Sure.
And the Red Wings were the very final game of the regular season. They were in Montreal.
Uh-huh.
They had to win the game. Washington had to lose.
Right, remember.
Right?
Yep, remember that.
Philly had, whatever. It was the Philly-Washington game. I think Philly scored the empty netter.
Yep.
Yeah, so Philly had to lose that game, right? And it was down to the final seconds. We had won the game. The Red Wings had won the game. Mm. And then we knew that the empty netter went in the net, that that Washington scored, whatever, and the game ended. So it really came down to the final seconds of the regular season. And then you're feeling like, man, we missed by, a goal.
Seconds.
An empty net goal. Right,
And
it's so there's that. And then you get to the next season and everybody was a little disappointed. The Red Wings have struggled in March for the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. It really seems like the toughest month for them to play in. Mm-hmm. So last year in March, things kind of started to tumble. And you could feel the energy of them probably not getting into the playoffs again. But I think this year, the coaching change they made midseason, it was December, to bring in Todd McClellan, him starting training camp the way that he did. You mentioned that he's had his moments already of like great coaching moments to get this team on fire and back on track. So I think the expectations this year are playoffs. I think players have that expectation that there's really no other answer that is the next step for this team. And they've been patient with the rebuild. And Steve Yzerman does things a very meticulous, patient way.
Mm-hmm.
And drafting and developing players. And we're seeing some of the fruits of that now. So I think it has to be the next step for this team to get into the postseason, whatever that looks like come April. But you want to be there. You want to be in the dance.
And they're in a decent spot. I know they've lost three in a row, but teams like Toronto, they're struggling. Tampa, Florida, they're not doing as well as they normally have been. Because at the end of the season, you think in that division, it's going to be Toronto, Tampa, or Florida, 1-2-3 in whatever order. But now we see Montreal, and now we see Detroit and all these other clubs, right? So I love it. I love the whole parity aspect of the whole thing.
And Boston playing
and
well
Boston.
Right now, too.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody expected.
I work with a fellow on the weekend, and he's a Boston diehard, and he was so excited to rip Toronto after Boston played Toronto. And so he said, look, I guarantee you win. Well, they ended up winning. So I haven't talked to him since. I don't want to because I know what I'm going to get for that. I want to go back to game one. You've sat down with Todd McClellan. You know Todd McClellan. You talked about him coming in last year and now that this full season with him. he ripped his club. He said, look, paraphrasing, we spent 3 weeks doing all these things, and then you come out, you lay an egg 5-1, we looked awful. What did you make of that, where a coach comes out publicly to the press, to the media, and puts the entire team, whether it's justifiable or not, after game one, under the bus, so to speak?
Well, he's a vocal coach, okay, right? And I think I've noticed that since he took over, even at practices. Like, he's much louder than any other coach I've ever covered this team under. So I appreciate that about him. And I think the players do too. They see the success that he's had as a head coach and his different stops around the league. And they know that he's kind of got that grittier old school edge to him that this team may have needed to get over that hump. And for him to come out and say to us, the media, that this team needs to be sick of this. He looked at some of his leaders on this team and said, aren't you guys sick of this? Do you want to keep losing like this?
Right.
And we saw them turn it around almost instantly. So maybe it is what they needed. And we have a great team that's not going to shy away from taking the responsibility, right? Captain Dylan Larkin's great. He'll put everything on his shoulders, which sometimes he doesn't need to, but he will. And you've got guys that hold themselves accountable in that room. So I think the coach holding them accountable is just another, you know, they're not going to shy away from that. They're not going to be upset about that. They're going to respond to him because they know that they have to. And he's done it a couple of times now, just getting his team to respond. And he's going to need to on Thursday. Their next game is on Thursday against Anaheim. Mm-hmm. You're going to need a big response there. You've got a big homestand coming up where you could really stack up some points and you have to take advantage of it. And it starts then. So a couple practice days and you hope that he can get the message across that what happened. It wasn't as bad of a game as we saw on Montreal. They aren't playing that bad right now, but they've got to figure out how to get the puck back in the net.
Yeah, it's always the final result, right? You see it 5-1, they must have played terribly. I always say this too about hockey and any team in the game of the 32. You can't win a playoff spot in October and say half of November, but you can lose one, right? So you got to try to find ways to bank these points, which come into play before you hit game 82. You mentioned Dylan Larkin, 19 points, 16 games. I've been a massive fan of his for so long. An extremely talented player. Tell me a little bit more about him, some of the things that make him click on the ice, and what he's like off the ice as well.
When people say Dylan Larkin is the motor of this team, they mean it. The players see it that way, and he does it both on the ice and off the ice. And he's so he's a quiet leader, at least to us. I know he's probably a little bit more vocal with his teammates behind the scenes, but he leads by example. And when you think about the guys that Dylan Larkin learned from how to be a captain, it's Henrik Zetterberg, right? And Henrik Zetterberg learned how to be a captain from Nick Lidstrom and Steve Yzerman. Yeah. Nick learned from Steve Yzerman.
Not so there's bad a company.
Lineage of captains that really, really made an impact on this organization. And he knows how important that role is. And the fact that he's in his 11th season is crazy to me. It still feels like he's a young kid, but he's off to a great start. He is the energy and the motor for this team. He gets them going. He keeps them going. And like I said, he's the kind of guy that will put a loss on his shoulders like he did after the Blackhawks game on Sunday. He said, I had a wide open net and I didn't score, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's the kind of guy that's going to do that. But he's a great leader for this team. And I think that he's surrounded by some more talent this year, so it's elevating his game even more. And it's impressive to watch. And he'll, like I said, he'll continue to do that. He's looking forward to hopefully playing in the Olympics this year. Likely will after the Four Nations tournament and all that.
Right.
Love that got him some national attention that he deserves, because he's one of the guys that can fly under the radar. But he so deserves all of it, and he's a great captain.
Is he underrated?
I think so. Okay. I do that. And maybe like what he's doing, he's the player that he is kind of the player that he is. He maybe does have like another level to his game right now. He might be in his prime and maybe we're going to see that this year. But I think what's underrated about Dylan Larkin is just how well he plays the 200-foot game. Mm-hmm. Like, he may not be the super flashy offensive guy. He has those skills and he can do it. But the little things about his game are what everybody appreciates. He plays so many minutes. He's always on the ice. He's in every situation, penalty kill, power play. Like, he is so important to this team, and he plays a very, very good defensive game. So I think sometimes that's the part that flies under the radar, because if you're just looking around the league, you're like, well, how many points is he scoring, right? And he's still pretty impressive there, but the other parts of his game are what makes him elevated to me.
When I saw that John Gibson was no longer a member of the Ducks and he was now with Detroit, I was annoyed. And the reason why I was annoyed was because every time the offseason comes before we put in our preseason predictions, one of the questions is biggest name to be traded. And I've said for about 25 years that is John Gibson coming out of Anaheim. So now he doesn't have to do it anymore because he's with Detroit. How's he been adapting to the Red Wings? I know they've kind of gone split down the middle with him and Cam Talbot so far today in Detroit.
Yeah, I think he's been great. I think there's been games where he hasn't drawn the best cards in terms of the way the team plays in front of him. Sure. And I think that he's also come up with some really, really big stops in the games that he's been in. And the Red Wings have been trying to solve the goaltending issue for a couple of seasons now. That's no secret. They've got some really good young prospects in the system, but they've just got to get those guys here, right? So you think of like the Sebastian Cosa, who's playing for the Griffins right now. Trey Augustine, who's playing at Michigan State, wants to, you know, run it back and try to win the national championship there. But these guys, Cam Talbot and John Gibson, have been both really, really steady so far. And I think that's kind of the presence you need. I'd imagine, I don't know this for a fact, but as a coach, you'd love for one of those goalies to kind of take the reins and be your number one guy.
Right
now that hasn't quite happened because they've been splitting, but I'd imagine that you'd hope John Gibson could kind of prevail as the guy that can take most of the work, and Cam Talbot can be in there, you know, for the 30 plus games or whatever it is that you need him. But right now it seems like an even split, but I think John Gibson was a huge addition. I think he's starting to find his game a little bit more consistently. Again, some of the games and the numbers that you'll see from him don't exactly tell the whole story of how he's fit in here in Detroit. So it feels like he's starting to find his groove a little bit, definitely.
Outside of Dylan Larkin and some others, more notable names, if you will, on Detroit, who's impressed you the most so far as we're into this almost the middle of November here?
Yeah, I think I've been watching Marco Kasper a lot, and he's not. I think he would tell you he wishes he was having a better season right now than he actually is. But he's another guy. I mean, he's so young. He's 20 years old, 21 years old, playing in the league right now for a second year, and I think he's somebody that could really be the next level, that number two center that could really help this team. But he's got to elevate his game a little more. He's just a guy that I've always had my eye on. Of course, you're watching Patrick Kane, you're watching Alex DeBrincat.
Right.
Emmett Finney, the seventh round pick, has been really impressive to watch to this point. But to me, I think that watching Marco Kasper and actually Elmer Soderblom, who got off to a very slow start as well. He's a big guy that plays on the fourth line, has been impressive through this last, you know, probably 6-7 games, has really seemed to elevate his game. So you hope that he can continue to do that there. He was a sixth round pick. So if you can get him kind of going, that's another, a player that you hit on there. And Mason Appleton has actually been a low key, very good addition for this team too, just to kind of round out the bottom six and help really get those lines going. So there's a few guys on the Red Wings that don't have the flashy name that you should be watching for. And again, a lot of youth. So you're just watching for these guys to see where their careers go.
I think they're in a great spot. They're moving in the right direction. You mentioned handles in the NBA. You can talk about it, I guess, in hockey when it comes to stick handling. Patrick Kane, you mentioned his name. You went up close with him and seen him. It is amazing to me. He, to me, is one of the most fluid and poetic, I guess, stick handlers I've ever seen in the game. He still has it. What does he still bring to not just the Red Wings, but again, we talk about youth with the team, but he's one of the veterans. What does he bring to the organization right now?
Well, I mean, he's Patrick Kane, so that's the name, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's the guy. And it's so cool that he's a Red Wing. I don't know if I ever thought it would happen. Sometimes I still don't believe that he's actually here in Detroit, but it was unfortunate that he got hurt. He missed 9 games with early this season, just came back, has played 2. And he's not looking as, you know, he started the season really strong. So I think he's still just trying to get back to that point after returning from the injury, and no doubt that he will. But what he brings to the team is a presence, right? Aside from the scoring and the power play and what he still, like you said, does with his hands. Yeah. He's incredible to watch on the ice still, but he brings a presence that everybody respects. When you talk about the youth of this team, imagine walking into a locker room as a 20-year-old and saying,
"Oh, Patrick Kane,
right?" And he's so good at talking to these guys and mentoring these guys and being there when they do need it. And every young player will tell you that they can ask him questions. He's really, really smart, and he's still thoroughly loves the game of hockey. Like, there has not
been
a player
so important.
I think he loves the game so much, and all his coaches will tell you that. Anybody that talks to him will tell you that he still loves it, absolutely loves the game, and loves being in Detroit, which is great.
Before we get to 77 seconds with you, have you ever had a picture with Sergei Fedorov, Chris Draper, Jeremy Roenick, and Chris Chelios?
So funny. I actually texted my bosses after I did this event, right? Yeah. I sent the picture and I was like, I don't think I have a cooler picture in my phone. So no, I did. That was so cool. And this is the first time that I've met Sergei. I've been with the Red Wings for now 9 seasons and have not had to meet Sergei Fedorov. So that was like, you know, starstruck moment for me. Very, very cool to have him in town.
Oh, some of the greats to play the game and some of the greats to play with the Red Wings. Okay, let's go to 77 seconds. Again, I think this is the only segment in media history where there is a time limit, but we don't care about it. So let's go. Ready? Here we go. 7 questions. We'll get through them as quick as we can or as long as you can. It's up to you. Okay. More 3-on-3 overtime, yes or no?
No. I like the way they have it right now. Maybe I'm the only, I might be hot take, the only one that has it feeling that way right now, but I think 5 minutes is good. And I don't think they should tie. I honestly, I'd rather them do a shootout. I don't think there should be ties. So I like the way they have it right now. If anything, it would just be a couple more minutes, but I think it's operating fine.
You cover baseball as well. Coolest thing about the Green Monster. How intimidating is that?
Coolest thing about the Green Monster, it is intimidating too, because I sat in the dugout, like in the Tigers dugout, and you think this ball, like if somebody hits one over there, you think it's going, it's got to be out of here. And no, it hits the top of the wall. So it is very intimidating. And I was talking to our outfielder, our left fielder, like, how do you play a ball off that wall? Right. Like watching it up close looks even harder than it does on TV. But selfishly, the coolest thing about the Green Monster was going in to sign it.
That's what I saw that video.
Yeah, seeing some of the names that have signed that, like there were like the royal family had signed the Green Monster. Like there, everybody has signed that, and it was really cool to go through and look and see what years and find people and then put my mark on there too. So that was really, really fun.
Historic piece of history in Major League Baseball. One thing you would change if you could about hockey.
Ooh. One thing I would change about hockey.
If anything, doesn't have to be.
Yeah, no, let me think. This is a tough one. This is a really tough one.
Do you think they have the as best they can with the instant replay and the eyes in the sky, so to speak?
Yeah, I hate being critical because it's so hard. Right, that is such a hard thing to do. And having, you know, they're doing the best they can with all of it. Honestly, I'm love old school hockey, and a little bit of the physicality feels like it's been taken away from the game just in terms of, and player safety is so important. So I'm always a fan of that too, but I do wish they would let like fights go a little bit longer and let guys rough it up a little bit. Yeah. If you remember some of the old school Red Wings teams that I grew up watching, that was such a big part of it. So I do miss a little bit of that. And I think we've gotten maybe a little bit too far away, but also I totally get player safety. So that I understand that part of it too, but I do miss a little bit of like the rough and tumble type hockey.
NHL is a lot about fashion. It's become that way in the last number of years. Best dressed Detroit Red Wing.
I think Mo Sider always has the best suits. I tell him that all the time. I love his outfits and his style. And our team actually decided that they were still going to wear suits, even with the, you know, the relaxed dress code rules that happened this year, the rule change that they could wear kind of whatever they wanted and be casual. They were like, nope, we're still wearing suits. And they do it post game on the plane. They're all in suits. I was like, mad respect for that. So
love it.
They all have some pretty good style.
Love it. I'm trying to take some notes from them. I'm failing, but I'll see what I can do from now on. A couple more to go. How good is Logan Reaver's Jennifer Coolidge impression?
A plus. When he did that, I had no idea. None of us knew that was coming. Yeah. That was like week two on the job for Logan.
Yeah.
And we put him on the spot. Jason did. Jason Benetti, our Tigers play-by-play. He nailed it. I was so impressed. I'm like, all right, yep. He's going to fit right in.
Love it. Family. Last one. One interview, past or present, in any sport that you would like to be a part of, that you would like to be the interviewer.
I feel like I would have loved to talk to Tiger Woods in his time. In
interesting.
His prime.
Why is that?
Yeah. Because golfers are so interesting to me. It's kind of like pitchers, right? Like there's an individual aspect to that for baseball, for that specific position. There's an individuality to that role and the way that they mentally get into the game. For golf, that's it. Like it's just you, and the way that they think and mentally prepare is something that's very interesting to me. Like, I think there has to be something wired different to be that good
I agree.
At golf and to be so in it and I feel like Tiger Woods in his prime, just because of who he is, would have been somebody for me that I would have loved to sit down and talk to.
Daniella, this is the first time I've done this with you, and hopefully it's not the last. This has been a lot of fun. Appreciate this. And yeah, we're pulling for Detroit for sure. So thanks for doing this. And yeah, appreciate the time.
I appreciate it. So much fun.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.